Holden Dancer to Johnny Carson. My name is Ed. My name is Jay Spoonheim, and with me tonight are four people who have done a lot of work to bring you phase two of Lifestyle for Singles, and I really want to say that. They have done a lot of work, and I'm not even sure why I'm here, because they have done the work, and they're prepared, and they're ready to share with you some things that I think will provoke the discussion that we began the other night and give us new direction, and hopefully some new insight and understanding of the issues that we face in that question of Lifestyle for Singles. Ed Miller, Harvey Harmon, Susie Kittner, Carol Woody are the four presenters, and I'm going to turn it immediately over to Susie, who's going to recap last session and take us on into this one.
On Monday night, we met for an hour and a half formally, and some of the discussion went on to 1 o'clock in the morning. There were three parts to Monday night. The first part was the movement from depreciation to appreciation of the single life, both on a personal level and in society. The second phase of that evening was talking about the continuing problems of being a single. And the third part was where we talked about key concerns. And that's why we're here tonight, is part of the topic set of key concerns. In the first segment of depreciation to appreciation, I talked about the movement from viewing myself as a half to viewing myself more as a whole person. Instead of looking for a half to fit another half, I was looking, feeling of myself more as a whole person, searching for another whole person to make a commitment with. The assets to being single, I felt, were flexibility and some of the special friendships I share with women now. The liabilities are that there is very little continuity to my life. There's 3 months here and 4 months there and a year here, and it's hard for it to hang together. Another liability is the tendency to narcissism. When am I being selfish or dwelling too much on myself, and when am I not? One of the other liabilities was the myth that married men are safe. For men, it would be the myth that married women are safe. That kind of relationship has to be explored sometimes. We decided Monday night that the transition is not complete. We are still making the movement from depreciation to appreciation. And one of the important points made was some of the people couldn't tell if it was a change of their own attitude or a change of society's attitudes that they felt more comfortable being single. We also decided that single would be an inclusive term to mean widows, widowers, divorced, and anyone who fits into that segment.
And the other person that spoke was Jeff, and he isn't here tonight, but I'll recap what he went over. And basically what he went over was career over commitment, or the career becomes the other half, that you're married to your career. And also, he went about on the focus of goals and beliefs that he lost track of due to the fact that he was involved in his career and not looking at, well, am I ever going to have a relationship, or there's no time for it right now because my career is more important. Then there were some burning issues that came up, so I just want to go over them again. And that was communication, intimacy, sexuality, education, trust, honesty, and expectations. Now, according to my poll that I went around asking people,
the Ed poll,
the following afternoon, I went around hunting singles, and I kept asking them what area they would really be interested in for part two of this forum. And by popular demand, it was communication. So that's why we chose communication, and that's why we're here tonight. And we will take it from there. Now, from there, that goes into what area of communication. We're going to have some role playing tonight. They're going to be two short 5-minute role playing skits, and After that, we would like you to break down into groups of four or five, and we'll tell you basically what you're going to, what we would like you to discuss. And after that, you would get together as one large group. Now, I want to stress that we don't want to focus, that you have to feel like you have to participate in these groups. That's up to you. And we're not pushing anything as for pro this or pro that. If you feel like flowing, flow with it. And there are no pressures. And that's what we want. We want to make it as comfortable as all possible. So I think we should start with skits. That's for that's our first okay. We have a scene here that takes place in the library at a university.
Graduate library.
And so.
Mike mentioned before that we don't want you to focus necessarily on what we're talking about, but how we're communicating. We're not trying to present some phenomenal dramatic piece here, but we're trying to begin conversation and look at different ways that sometimes people communicate in relationships. So.
Scene one, act one.
Oh, yeah, it was really nice.
Easter. Huge family thing, you know. I can hardly wait to get together, you know, Harvey, and I really think you'd have a great time, too. I really do. You know, we go to church in the morning, and we fill up three pews, and then we go home, we have this dinner on the antique-laced tablecloth.
Feeling that his family didn't believe that way. So we thought that was really good communication. But the second one was really obvious that there was, you know, poor body language, and she wasn't even looking at his response, you know, and which was very obvious. And a lot of body language just wasn't watched very well. And
Okay.
That was important.
Good. Thank you.
Jane? Up here. Also, in the first one we were talking about is that the letter that they had gotten was almost like an expectation of her to go. So it seemed like there was some kind of a communication block between that one. Whereas in the second one, they were more or less, she was throwing out the idea of an invitation. I don't know if that came across to anybody else. But
anybody else speak up on that? Or want to speak to it? Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
So how did that?
Yeah.
Well, more or less that the communication from, let's see, it was Ed that was doing it, that he hadn't communicated the idea yet to Carol, that the idea was there. It seemed to me as though the idea just came to rest, you know, right out, that he wanted to come, or we more or less expect you to come, or would like you to come, and the idea of prepping before saying, you know, or prying before saying, would you like to come, and the second was going up the idea that this is a family.
So he was direct and I was indirect. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah,
kind of.
He had already established the visitation, whereas you had not yet.
At least she wasn't straight away. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Good. Other groups in response to what you heard?
I think everyone in our group felt they'd probably been sometime in both situations. Mm-hmm. And interesting that Catherine said she had been both in Harvey's shoes and in, who was with Harvey?
I was. In
Susie's shoes. You know, both sides, not just female, male side. On the last question there, on communication, how have you grown up with communication with your parents? Felt like when parents talked honestly with you, you could respond honestly. And also, as we've gotten older, when we've learned how to communicate honestly with our folks, they can respond in the same way to us. It's two-way.
Interesting. Finding yourself in both circumstances, did that alter the way you communicated?
In a later relationship?
Well, no. The comment was made from this group that people found themselves in both situations that were role-played. My question is, did you find yourself in varying your communication according to the person you were talking with, or were you straight or were you oblique? Either.
I found myself in a situation like that, and at first I just wanted to laugh but I didn't want to hurt this person's feelings, you know. But I was straightforward with him, and he appreciated that a lot. You know, it was a real funny situation, but then there have been times when I've gone right along with him, beat around the bush, and, you know, but now it would definitely be a straightforward answer. But I've been through both situations.
Okay, so you have at times allowed yourself or permitted yourself to run with the way the conversation was going rather than be yourself.
Yeah.
Or, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel that in either situation, you should be straight out. For me, I've always been straight out and forward with the person, because to me, if you're not and kind of beat around the bush, in a way you're playing a game with the person, and that's not really fair to either party.
Yeah, that goes only so far as when you can be too blunt and too open with the person at the same time. In the desire to be open, you'll be so open that the person will misinterpret it.
Did you see that happening in this communication? A little too speedy or too open? Okay, well, excuse me, go ahead, Neil. I'm sorry.
Well, like, you know, if you beat around the bush, just go around it once, maybe.
I think won yourself a new nickname. Go ahead, continue.
No, that's all I just said.
Okay, but you're saying that there is a, you can be too blunt or too direct and also stifle communication.
Sure, you can scare someone.
Sure you can. Good point.
Well, and another thing is too, that sometimes what you reserve judgment on what you say because your mind yourself might change. And you can go with changing emotions in yourself faster than you can express them sometimes. That isn't correct. It is. You know, you say something at one time and a week later, you really don't feel that way any longer, but you've already expressed it, so you sort of reserve judgment sometimes.
Okay, that's another issue. Let's hold that just for a minute, that idea that your own thoughts and feelings on that given situation may change, and so there may be a need to keep things open, but you can be direct about that too, I suspect. I always tell my wife, don't take my first answer. Because it's almost good. No. Give me a chance, to think about it and maybe when I reflect on it. But I want to come back to this idea of being too blunt. There's surely this notion of being direct, but I hear an awful lot of people today saying I'm just being honest and using that as an excuse to dump. Now, what safeguards that?
Respect.
Respect for?
For the person.
Okay, I mean, and I think that's really a key. Communication is really dependent upon how you sense that other person, and a lot of the stuff we hear today about just being honest or being upfront is really not being honest or upfront. It's dumping, and we I think that doesn't get called enough. But, more comments. The idea of changing, keeping things open, that's an important point, I think, yeah.
Well, it's really important to be open. I mean, we're really treading on thin ice. I know in situations I've been in where it's real easy to make too many assumptions too quickly. Because you want to be open and yet you're not so sure. It's real touchy kind of thing, And I kind of saw that was Susie's protection, So she right away, she presented herself like saying, well, she never really asked him. She just straightforward said, well, that was her cover kind of thing. And I think we do that a lot without even realizing it.
She made the offer rather light, didn't she?
Yeah.
Kind of an ease, huh?
Yeah, looking straight.
So that if the no comes, it's, well, okay.
Yeah.
But down deep, she really wants something.
Sure.
Down deep, she really wants something.
That's right.
Yeah.
Self-protective strength. Yeah. Well, we do that in so many areas.
But what a painful isolationism that must be. Yeah. Huh? When you really want something and then you treat it kind of up here on top, and then when the answer comes, you treat it like that. But down here, something else is going on.
But then again, Harvey was to blame for how Susie felt. Because if Harvey didn't really like Susie, and Harvey took Susie out on a date because he didn't have anything to do on Friday night. then here Susie might have really had a crush on Harvey, and Harvey knew it all the time. and so therefore Harvey just wants to play it up with Susie. And Harvey knows that Susie is going to ask.
Get your mind.
What I'm trying to say is that sometimes it's the other guy's fault.
Vicky, are you saying that Harvey's responsible for my feelings?
Yeah. Played it really cold. I mean, didn't he say hi to Susie down the hallway? Susie wouldn't have even known that everything would be all nice.
I think that's the point, Vicky. I think when Arnie and I were
were trying to do was to present the kind of opposite pole of Carol and Ed. And just like the first fellow who spoke back there, who just kind of answered it all, and the body language was bad. I think I looked at Harvey 3 times.
Yeah.
And Carol and Ed kept pretty steady eye contact the whole time. We could read stuff into Harvey and me all night long. I have a basic disagreement, and that is that Harvey is not responsible for my feelings. We are responsible to each other to work them out. You know, only go around the bush once.
but he went around the bush. I mean, he picked her out.
Did I give him a chance to say anything?
No. She said yes. And he asked her out.
Yeah.
Were you trying to say that he was the Harvey?
Yeah.
Going out to see Superman, going to dinner. Yeah, so, that his taking you out to see the movie didn't mean that he was being a serious going to dinner. If that's what going to dinner means, he's being serious.
But neither one of them were communicating well. He didn't take any opportunity to say, you know, hey, you know, that really doesn't sound too terrific to me. He just sort of did all the body languages that everyone else could see but Susie, and said, well, gosh, I've got a paper. Mm-hmm. So he was just as responsible for the poor communication.
Okay. Yeah, it's a mutual thing. Communication is two-way street, for sure. Up here?
I get to brag and say that my official title is a communication disorder specialist. And we work with a communication model when we're looking at children who do not communicate. And we look specifically with how they communicate with adults. We record, transcribe, how they communicate. We consider a 3 or 4 column communication model as essential to adequate communication, which means the adult says, hi, how are you? The child responds, okay, then the adult comes back, what are you doing today? Child responds again. If the communication only goes through 2 columns, the adult says something, the kid says something, and that's the end, then communication hasn't really taken place. Or if the child speaks and the adult does not respond, there's no communication. The two sets of role playing, Ed and Carol were just going 1, 2, 1, 2. They were just going across the columns. Harvey and Susie, they didn't get... Harvey dropped the ball. Susie dropped the ball. You know, there was no communication, no quality communication. And in thinking about how our family has taught us to communicate, I found that my family... We never got past 2 or 3 columns at the most. And it's been work to develop the skill to get past a yes, you know, just chop chop kind of thing, to really listen and respond.
What are some of the skills that they need, or that are needed to get past 2 or 3?
Who's the speaker?
Down here.
Oh. Skill at listening is really essential. That we see that as one of the very biggest skills, and how that's developed. You know, theirs. And I guess the idea of listening also ties in with the fact that an aspect of listening is not listening to respond, but listening to get the idea that's being communicated. In so many of our forums, we listen, and as soon as someone says something that makes us click, then we're getting our answer ready or our response ready, and we don't even hear the rest of it.
We just listen for an opening.
Right, and then we get in.
Yeah, I like that. I really appreciate that idea. That picks up on what Lisa was just saying about two, it's a two-way. I mean, the has to be sent, receives, returned, received, returned. I mean, that back and forth. And it surely wasn't happening in that second example.
Here. I'd like to raise a question from Susie and Harvey. They seem to be speaking basically on two different wavelengths. Susie was a little more serious about the whole thing than Harvey was. I mean, you know, she was seemed awful serious about the guy. I got the impression that he just kind of had a neat time going after Superman. They kind of had a great friendship and all this, but how do you get two people who are on two totally different wavelengths, and this isn't for anyone in particular, just to the group, how do you get two people on different wavelengths to get onto the same wavelength without getting messed up emotions? I mean, without hurting one another.
Why can't you just talk it out?
I think that's the question he's asking, though. I mean,
how do you go about talking it out?
How do you go about talking it out? What are your best
friends? I think... Well, just one quick response, and that's when you and I have a difference, the IA message language is very popular today, but I think it's really an important tool, that when I'm feeling uncomfortable about something in our relationship, that I identify my feelings in a way that is not an accusation about you. And as soon as I can identify my feelings in a way that's understandable and not threatening to you, then there's a possibility that you can respond and that communication can begin. But if I come at you, hey, you're really making me feel angry, you know what's going to happen. I mean, the communication is unlikely to happen. But if I say I'm really feeling uncomfortable with what's going on right now, and I think we need to talk, or I really appreciate our talking, or something, then there's a little more elbow room, emotional elbow room, and the possibility that something can begin to take place. So I'm saying, not so briefly as I meant to start out, but the IA message kind of procedure can be very helpful in that kind of a situation.
Jay, maybe you should just say a little bit more about the IA message, how it's given.
Well, how many are familiar with the parent effectiveness training or teacher effectiveness training or all the effectiveness training? Active listening is a key skill in that whole process. And the...
I got to raise my hand. I took a course.
Well, okay. So somebody else, I don't feel particularly skilled in this. So.
Well, for example, Jay, you come up and we're sitting at the dinner table, and you never ask for anything. You just reach over like that all the time.
Yeah, I keep doing it though.
And you don't use deodorant, you know.
And there's a safe married man.
So there's a couple of ways to handle that. One is to say, damn it, would you just get out of my way?
Which is the way you're feeling. Which is the way you're feeling, okay?
But that is so difficult.
But you know that if you express your feelings that way, I'm going to just delay the shower as well. Right?
Yeah.
Therefore, what do you do?
I say, come on, Jay. What's going on here? Let me get it for you. Which is kind of middle of the road.
Okay, it's middle of the road.
The best way, and we might have to redo this a couple of times, is when you reach in front of me like that, I can't eat. And I'm upset.
Gee, I didn't know that. Was I doing that?
Yeah. Just ask me, I'll get it for you.
I really feel bad. I think I'll even go shower.
But I think sometimes, I don't know, I mean, I can say this, but I think sometimes it's good just to be totally upset. Because it gets your anger out, and you don't keep it inside of you, and it's, you know, instead of trying to beat around the bush, you let it out.
But Vicky, it's your anger.
Okay, I saw hands back here. Did I see hands way back? Over here then. Let's go in. Way in the back was first, and then I saw a hand over here speaking. Okay.
Okay. what I see as really being important when you're having a discussion with somebody else is you've got to be not so self-centered and thinking only of, like Susie was, you know, her whole thing was, now let's go and have a good time. And, you know, if she would have looked at Harvey, or if she would have even listened to when he said, well, yeah, I like food. You know, like, she could have read it right then, and it should have clicked in her head that if all of us would be more aware of what the other party is thinking and not thinking just of what we feel and what we're trying to say. I mean, sure, Susie really wanted him to respond and say, yeah, I want to go, it sounds like a great time, but he didn't. And she just wasn't in tune to that at all. You know, and maybe Harvey too, you know, he could have responded differently, thinking, well, she's really excited about this. How can I say, hey, Susie, I can see how you're feeling, I understand what you're saying, but, you know, that's not how I feel. That you've really got to get away from being self-centered on just simply how you feel and really listen to the other person and respond to that person's emotions and their tone of voice and what they're saying.
Okay, so she could have been troubled in a number of ways, but right. First of all, that she was being self-centered. Secondly, she may just not have had the skills. She may have read his behavior right, got the message, didn't know how to deal with it, so just did what she knew how to do. I mean, that's the other side of that. That's a possibility, I think, so.
Yeah, I could just responding to that, I think communication went on. It wasn't quality, you know.
Yeah.
But Susie got the message real quickly. She finally turned and whined, you don't want to go.
Yeah.
You know, it was real clear.
Yeah, it was painful. Yeah. There's a hand right over here.
Yeah. Getting back to the anger thing,
Yep. And
also what she was saying, if you are really angry or really upset, you've got to admit to yourself that you are angry, that you want to do something positive in order to remedy the situation. You've got to, I believe, get in tune with that other person in a way. I know it's hard to do when you're angry, you know. But you got to kind of say, okay, I'm angry, I admit it, and go into it and say to that person, I'm very angry with you right now because, and explain exactly why you're angry, and then stop. And then listen to them for feedback on what you've just said.
Getting to that point where you have that kind of control, maybe. I mean, I do a lot of marital counseling, and dealing with that anger is the most significant problem, I would say, over and over again, to deal with it effectively, because the anger is always there, but to be able to help the other deal with that anger is really difficult. So you may have to set some prior things in motion to where you can get to that point where you can then sit down and say what you say, mm-hmm. You know.
You may have to do some
other kind of work to get some control in order to talk that calmly about it. Mm-hmm. I saw his hands over here, yeah.
Yes, and another thing too is if you say that you absolutely do not like it, you know, don't do this, it's very, very destructive, no matter what you're trying to do. And it makes the other person very angry also. And in a situation like that, it's when you really don't want two angry people sitting there looking at each other, no matter what situation.
In that situation that we just kind of role played, Susie gave us three different level of responses. I really appreciated that because I think you can feel with each one, you know, the lessening of the tension. And that's really important.
I also think that sometimes we're only perceptive to the body language and to the things that we want to see. And we just kind of blot out in our mind the things that discourage our relationship or something like that. And so in Harvey and Susie's case, you know, he might have been giving her the message a long time ago, but she just couldn't pick up on that because, you know, that was negative and she didn't want it.
There was another way to look at that relationship, though, too. Yeah. Harvey may have had a very specific interest in that relationship. Susie reminded him that she hadn't told all. to a grandma. But I think we have here, you know, we can take that and use it well, because that's often going on in a relationship. Huh? So you got to be upfront about that also. One partner has a very limited interest in the relationship. And I might at this point just say that hopefully we're going to have a forum after I leave Sunday on sexual ethics for singles next week. But I think that was one of the things that came up. And it is a key issue, but it deserves a whole lot of time and attention. So anyway, I think all I want to say at this point is you could read that miscommunication as due to differing interests, both having interest in the relationship but for different reasons. Mm-hmm. Often going on in this kind of situation.
It seemed like there was a lot of blame being put on Susie for not recognizing Harvey's body language, but I don't think Susie was giving Harvey the opportunity to respond to her body language. She wasn't communicating to begin with. So whether or not his body language represented anything valid, is confused by that whole thing, because she should have, from the very beginning, been communicating clearly both with her words and with her body language. Mm-hmm. If it was important to her, she should have been acting like it was important to her.
And then you have to ask, since she wasn't, why wasn't she? Mm-hmm. And that's where you get into that's where the struggle is, though. I mean, you know, is it because this is the way she learned to communicate? And if so, then how do you help her discover how to communicate more effectively? I mean, that's where what we're struggling with, isn't it, tonight? Any other comments on these series? Yes. Did I see a hand just about close?
Harvey had one.
Harvey, excuse me.
Yeah, I just wanted to get back to something that was said earlier and tie a few things in that you asked. I think about if you have a relationship where it's on a different level with the two people, and we sort of talked about it assuming that it was like just like friends or something, but if it's something, maybe I thought you were addressing, maybe if it's something, say, something more than that, what do you do then? I don't know, I don't have an answer, but some things that were circulating around that could be a possibility is if you do take the self-centeredness out of it, that's a big first step, that you're open to maybe the other person feels a lot more serious than you do. But if you're not so concerned about your own interests in that relationship or whatever in it, and are focusing a little on the other person, that's one way of not to be self-centered, and to start to bridge that gap.
Nobody.
I think that a lot of skills in communication, it's like growing up, that people can't tell you things, that you have to come to a point where you experience it. And the thing with Susie and Harv, I think is a stage that most people go through, you know, where you're all silly, and when something happens, you can't quite get your head together, and you don't know how to do it, and it flops. And you learn from that. You learn from that, and you gradually get to a more mature point of communication where you realize you have to settle down. I think it's a learning thing, too.
Yeah, I would even put more strongly than that. I wouldn't say just experiences being the teacher. I would say something we must work at. Intentional learning and communication skills is what we all need. Intentional.
As a result, though, I think that sometimes flops bring it to your attention.
Oh yes, realize, okay, yes, yeah. Now. I'm just saying that plus then intentional activity to work on it. Yeah, yeah.
I think some people never grow out of that kind of communication. And looking at some of the people I work with in psychiatric treatment, a lot of the kinds of problems that people have had all through life are because they've never been able to tell, you know, either their significant other, whatever that person is, what their needs are, and to be able to level with them, and have just, you know, either grown apart or just never been able to develop a relationship, you know, beyond a certain level, because they're not taking the risks, and they'll, you know, come in treating something really lightly when maybe it really did mean something. So how does the other person, you know, how do they know how that person's really feeling? So I think an awful lot of people don't get beyond that kind of communication.
Yeah. How many are taking risk in early Christian relationships? course, ALC courses. Oh, it's just a good basic skills in communication, but it's in a Christian context. But risk and trust. Yeah, I keep hearing that come up. You know, all of you are saying it different ways. You got to take the risk. And that's really true. Risk and trust are two of the bedrocks in communication. Willing to be vulnerable, take the risk, and open yourself to the possibility of being heard. That's key. Question or statement?
No.
Going back to a couple comments that were made a little bit ago, but you used the word ability to read their behavior. And maybe this is both a comment and a question, but that's just open for negotiation right there, because one shouldn't have to be open to somebody else's behavior as in a situation like that, but be open to at least express something verbally, because you're anticipating that they're going to read you the way you want to. However, somebody could take a smile and mean as being aggressive as opposed to taking a smile and meaning friendship. So, to the body language.
Yeah, I think body language always needs to be checked out.
No way.
Susie, are you feeling? No, I think that's right. I mean, the body language can or cannot give direct signal, right? And I think what you do is you read it. In the whole notion of active listening, you're perceiving and then putting into question form what you think you're perceiving. Is that a fair? No, that's not it. You speak, you can do that.
Well, it's also called reflective listening in some other schools of yeah. language. And it's a way of not miming back what the person said, because nobody needs a parrot. But reflecting back, you know, what I understand you to be saying is, rather than question form, because questioning can be very threatening if you're talking about something personal. You know, do you really mean question, you know, I can just feel defenses coming up all over the place. But what I understand you to be saying is whatever you're saying, and that allows the person an opportunity to say, yeah, you understand, or no, you've got it all wrong, let me try again. So it's a way of reflecting back what that person is saying, both for clarity's sake, you know, do I understand what you're saying, are we both communicating on the same level, and also sometimes giving them an opportunity maybe to hear what they're saying. Which will help the communication that those columns again to keep going.
Okay. I think it's 10 to 11, mm-hmm. and I'm wondering if we got to go through those other.
It was just going to be a quick wrap up. I mean, the skeleton was to get this far and to open it up. Okay. I guess.
I thought you had the second stage. We were communicating well.
Oh. Yeah, I'm in a bind because it's late. And Ed has one more thing he wants to add in that's really important to him and has been the motivating force for two forums now.
The last forum, we didn't talk about where the Lord works in your life in a relationship and in communication. And that's important. And as Christians, we have to work on that, that we can't just get involved in a problem by ourselves and say, well, I'm going to present it before the Lord by myself. That if you're going to have a strong relationship, it has to be done together. And that has to be shared together. Maybe not immediately when you're flaming hot,
I didn't tell it turns to ice. So.
I like using those words. But wait till things settle down a little bit and really get together and pray together. And present.
Sounds to me like you need prayer a little before that.
Yeah, but I think that's an important point that he's making.
Yes.
I think a lot of times here in these forums, we've left a lot of our Christianity out, and especially in relationships, that should be a central part, and also a unifying part.
See, I'm not so sure that's the case. I'm not willing to buy that critique so quickly.
That what now?
That the Christ is being left out. If, in fact, we live and move and have our being in Him, all that we say and do is done in that light, whether we verbalize it or not. Not that we should not verbalize it. I'm not saying that. But I'm not quite willing to say that when we get into these issues that we're leaving our faith behind. I won't allow that to be said for me, at least.
I think that was an incredibly theological statement when you said we've got to take the self-centeredness out of our relationship.
So I think this is a good phase of the discussion, is what I'm saying. So I'm really posing the other polarity strongly at this point, so we have it out there in good tension. Okay, and that's part of, I'm playing devil's advocate in part. But I want us to do that. Now, must we verbalize our faith in a way? Is that what feels comfortable to you, or is that, or can one understand oneself as being immersed in the faith? I think that's a good issue.
I just want to repeat the same thing in terms of Ed's question about relating to another person. We have to say, okay, now I'm going to bring God into it. Because isn't God there the whole time? I mean, if you're living that kind of a life, why does it have to be a separate thing? Why does it have to be like going to church on Sunday as opposed to living with you?
Or is what Ed's saying, that in this relationship, I must know if we are kindred spirits in the faith.
Yes.
No. No, if that's the question, now that's another. That's something else.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Instead of extracting it.
You see, so we have to check these things out. So now, if that's what you're saying,
right?
Then I have no problem.
I didn't hear what he said.
Well, I'm just trying to do some things here. Okay, that's what I mean. So now, if that's what you're saying, that as you meet this person and that it's very quickly important to you to establish whether you are kindred spirits. Beautiful. So then you can proceed together in that kind of mutuality. Then you'll know even the unspoken will speak faith. Even the body language will speak faith. And I think that we got to move to that kind of understanding of ourselves. Yeah. And there were a couple hands over here.
I was just... What about relationships with people who are not Christian?
Another good issue.
I don't think, you know, being a Christian yourself, you can leave Christ out, but it's not always the right thing. Well, but you can't always verbalize it. You can't always preach. I think, you know, sometimes when it is verbalized, it's taken as preaching and completely turned off. So
My relationship to the Lord is one of the most private and special things to me that I have. And I'm very picky about who I share that with. Incredibly picky. I mean, it's like, well, it's just very private. And I think Ed and I come down on different sides of this issue. And that's one reason why I said, Ed, you figure out how to say it tonight, because that's something that's very difficult for me to do.
Yes, but it's private, but we are supposed to be disciples in Christ. And our personal relationship with Him is private. And yes, I agree, but Christ says, proclaim my word. And that has to be verbal sometimes. Like Paul was in prison, and he verbalized it. You can call it preaching or not, but he planted the seed to a whole bunch of Roman soldiers, and more people were saved because Christ was the one that made Paul outflow in his love. And I think in a boy-girl relationship, I think it's very important to have both of you guys in the, you know, in Christ together. It's really hard to have one guy a Christian and another guy a non-Christian.
Yeah, but it's a matter of different strokes, speaking for different folks. Susie said it's very private and it's hard to verbally share, but I agree with Jay. You know, right off the bat, you could feel with Susie and any girl who know her, you could just tell she's full of love in Christ. And she didn't go around bannering that, you can just feel it. And so that's a, so then I agree with Jay there. It doesn't have to always be verbal.
I appreciate
although
it.
It does.
I appreciate it, Hilton, but I also want to quarrel with Susie at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good. See, I'll quarrel with her just to do one more kind of devil's advocacy, because I'm not so sure that there's any place in the faith for that kind of privacy.
And I may I restate my my issue? Sticky wicket. my prayer life, my prayer life, my spirituality, how I perceive God acting in my life. If I liken to that's the most intimate relationship I know, period. And that very deep, personal, private prayer life. is the facet, the one of many, the facet that is the hardest for me to share.
Okay.
That does not mean that there are not other facets which I may share quickly or easily. If what it means is that as I am intimate or grow to be good friends with Harvey, my date here, I mean, say we made it through that incredible thing, that one of the last things that I'm able to share, I mean, one of the very last gems I'm able to open up for another person to see is my personal and is my spirituality. I guess that's, is that clear?
But yeah. I have a question. Are you going to say to Harvey, I believe I'm a Christian?
Harvey will know I'm a Christian.
Yeah.
Harvey will know it. I mean, I'm still
he's going to discover it, is my conviction, if she is really a Christian.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, he's going to discover that through a whole variety of experiences. How come you're that way? At points.
That's weird.
Huh? Why do you conduct yourself in that way? Then comes, yeah, I agree with the comment over here that so often our Christianity, when it's important for us to verbalize it, we become boorish.
Mm-hmm.
And Christ becomes a bore. I know that doesn't sound good, but I'm saying that so often we use the name of Christ so easily and so quickly. You know, there's a danger in that end too, as well as the danger of not recognizing him and naming him at all. I think we have to recognize that there are two extremes. Hands all over the place.
I was just going to say sometimes acting can say more. Body language can say more than saying than talking. And like Susie was saying, Hart or whoever said, Harvey will know. And if Susie does, and if let's say Hart is not a Christian, you know, he's a real bad guy, whatever. Susie is not going to pursue
grace,
the relationship.
All grace.
She won't pursue it, being the Christian she is.
Hopefully it will not be as full as I desire, and we'll move on to greener fields. Yes.
Right, right. Okay, I'm not saying that you're going to pass Harvey off as all poo-poo. It's a Christian when you do that, you know, but it's or, well,
yeah,
you know what I'm trying to say.
I just want to say, I don't think that it's necessarily true that our actions will name the name of Christ specifically. That people may think, boy, is that ever a nice person, or gee, that person is so willing to help, or what has happened to me many times is, how can you keep on when people keep putting you down? How can you just keep on? And you don't have the courage to say, I can because, and then name the name of Christ. I don't think you have to give a sermon to name the name, but I don't think that being nice is going to be recognized as Christian.
I'm not saying it's being nice all the time.
Well, or whatever. Okay. I mean, being a good...
Yeah, but I mean, I think that's important. No, I'm not good. I don't want to get in that category either. All I'm saying is that the behavior needs... There has to be congruence between the name of Christ and your behavior.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I think you have to name the name, finally.
Well, I'm saying there are times when naming it becomes boorish, and there are times when not naming the name is faithlessness.